This is the soundtrack of our lives right now.
I have that song. I've had that song stuck in my head for like 2 weeks. It's driving me crazy.
It is a great song, and people who get the language will know what it's about. It's a pretty good song.
And the version I have stuck in my head isn't even what it sounds like.
It's just us singing it and whistling like idiots. What are we smoking right now?
These are our latest collaboration with Traficante Cigars. It's called
La Ofrenda, the offering.
And they come with these cool metal tags that have our OG Santa Muerte logo on it, as well as the prayer in English on Beck.
That's a pretty cool collab. These are the same cigars we took with us to Mexico City.
Yes.
Which we're going to talk about a little bit. Smooth, great cigars.
Yeah. Doesn't leave like an aftertaste in your mouth, and rolled very tight. They burn for a long time.
These are great. We've been busy recently, right, Eddie?
That's another statement.
but before we get into our adventures, we've had a couple of months of heavy travel and adventures. But we, even before we were about to head off on our own adventure, our friend Avi here, who's basically in charge of all of our recording and media, our friend Avi had a wonderful vacation planned. We were all kind of chilling out, you know. Avi was on vacation, all of us were doing our own thing, and he went to the Middle East, basically, to kind of part of the Middle East. Where were you, Avi, specifically? When you started seeing
bombs over Baghdad?
When you started seeing these rockets flying over your head?
Jordan.
You were in Jordan. Avi was in Jordan as all of us watching TV, seeing these rockets fly across the sky, and I'm like thinking, like, wait a minute, where is this? Where is this happening? I started seeing a map. I was like, isn't Avi out there right now? You got stuck at the airport. You were about to fly out of Jordan when these rockets flew over your head.
Yeah, I got stuck in the airport in Jordan.
So what was it? So these were rockets being fired from Iran into Israel.
I think they were both ways.
Both ways.
Yeah, they were blowing up. Intercepted.
The Jordanians were blowing up some of the rockets that were flying over their airspace. Man, I hope we can get back to a place where everybody could chill out. But not anytime soon, probably. We basically utilized our existing skill sets and some of the influences we have already in the security field, and got you in touch with the embassy pretty quickly, the Mexican embassy.
And there's a Mexican embassy in Jordan.
There's a Mexican embassy in Jordan. They were actually pretty responsive pretty quickly. We teach people some of these things in classes, and it was pretty interesting to basically just start doing the same thing for one of our guys when he got stuck in a pretty interesting spot. You were rebooked another flight and on your way within like 24 hours, right?
Yeah. The next day I got a flight. The Mexican consul called us like really early in the morning and said like that there are flights to Egypt right now, just a local airline, and you better leave now.
On that one. Yeah.
We were looking up ways to like smuggle you into different countries and stuff.
We were like talking to people who had assets in the area, trying to figure out extractions, but it was a pretty interesting exercise, a live exercise into some of the skill sets we teach people, and then we kind of advise other people on, and all of a sudden we found ourselves like just like doing it for one of our own. That was pretty cool. I think the world itself kind of went crazy after it's been pretty crazy after that. We've spent the last 2 months basically running around.
Because we skipped them. Did we skip a month for recording?
Yeah, we just like we're off. Yeah. We had a trip to Mexico City, which was pretty pretty nuts. We've been slowly but surely kind of reconnecting with a lot of the people that we had kind of spread out across the country, like training groups. Like I started my career as an instructor in Mexico, and I have like groups of like training groups across the country from Guadalajara, Monterrey, Mexico City. And we got an invitation to Mexico City specifically to kind of reconnect with some of the people that we know down there, including one of our close guys who's currently active duty federal in law enforcement down in Mexico City, who's doing some pretty interesting work related to organized crime. And who's we got to speak to him on camera for a bit, and that's something that's coming up pretty soon on the Patreon and also on the YouTube channel. We're gonna put that up. But we had a pretty amazing invitation by the one and only Doña Queta to Tepito. Doña Queta is the lady that started the first public holy death altar in Tepito. Santa Muerte and the practice of Santa Muerte and the veneration of death, basically, that is now something that most people probably saw for the first time on Breaking Bad and on Bad Boys 3 and all that. That started its public life in Tepito through the hands of this lady who has been a friend of mine for years now. She started seeing some of the interviews we were doing, some of the podcasts and stuff like that, and she was like, "Hey, can I be on that?" So she invited us to the main altar in Tepito, which is like a very dangerous neighborhood to go to.
Hella spicy.
Hella spicy. What did you think about that spot? It's basically, it's in the middle of one of the spiciest parts of Mexico City, which is Tepito. There's a lot of interesting people around, and it's a front yard of a building with a window, and in that window there is an effigy of death, basically with a dress, and people constantly show up with candles, cigarettes, offerings, music, money, and they just like venerate this death effigy. What did you think going there?
So we pull up and our guide, is he our guide or is he just a friend? But our friend that we know that's in works in the federal portion of Mexico. I don't even know if I can say this, but as we're going down the road to just about make our last turn, he takes out his service weapon and then racks the slide and puts it back. And I was like, all right. And then we pull up and you guys are like, hey, don't get out of the car yet. And our driver and you went and checked with Doña Queta, because it's not just Doña Queta. He probably could just drive in and be like, hi, but
no,
like that's pretty risky, I think, because just driving in, you can tell where the lookouts are. This street is like, if you fuck around on the street, like you're cooked, because there's no
any disrespect. There's been Christian groups showing up there trying to tell these people that they're
fucked,
that they're praying to the devil, and it gets very, very apocalypto very quickly.
They don't care about printing, the guys that are there.
Yeah,
printing is not a concern. They're wearing chest packs with radios in them underneath their shirts. It's surprisingly very organized for what you would think would be laid back. It's not even every block, like every quarter to half a block of this main street is a lookout. And we're just sitting in the car waiting for you guys, and we're just like in the back seat. There's like three of us sitting in the back seat, and then like one or two more in like the jumper seat and back. And we're just like,
I've been going to that altar since 2004. It opened in the year 2000, and In 2004, I went down to, no, 2006, I went down there for the first time. I was there down there for a training assignment. And, you know, some of the people that I was training down there with were like, hey, you have to go see this space. This is pretty interesting spot. It was way spicier back then. You had to know people there to be able to enter there. And that's the first time I met Doña Queta. Doña Queta is this, I don't know how to describe her. She is
like your grandma.
She is like your cool grandmother.
Yeah.
She's a community leader. She runs that block.
Oh yeah.
She runs that block. Very unassuming, low key, no extravagant wear. She's like your grandma. But she runs that place. Her word is the law there. When I met her, I realized quickly that you would assume, or you would think, because of the culture around this this faith practice, that everybody that goes there is a criminal. But then I started seeing politicians showing up. I showed up there with a bunch of federal police officers. Normal and myself. People. So it's people from all walks of life basically showing up there. And it is interesting to see how they interact with her, because she's basically just a guardian, basically, or a keeper of the space. And when we got there, you know, she's been tracking me and following me as I progress in my weird adventure of a life. She's been a voice in my ear for years, like advice. And she's an amazing lady. When we got there, we got there and told her like, hey, we're here with these people that you might not know, including you, mm-hmm. and just tell everybody that they're cool. That's what we were doing there when we got there, because they didn't know who you were. Then we had to announce you guys.
It's kind of a lot of people showing up once too, with camera equipment and
backpacks. So we had to announce you. We had to announce the people that we were with. And when we did, like, oh, she was expecting, you know, somebody to show up there with cameras to talk to people. But we showed up with a few people with us.
About seven.
Ruelas was there with us. Ruelas, the knife maker, and also the guy that runs a pretty amazing dog rescue in Baja. Sadok, who is the guy that runs our training group in Guadalajara. The
Krav Maga Academy.
Yeah, and who else was with us? Arturo was with us, the guy that runs the training group in Mexico City, and our guide down there, who goes there regularly. So that's why he was our main point of contact. She's pretty open to speaking to people, and a lot, she's been interviewed many times by members of the press, but never from somebody that, you know, that has known her for this long and is also a part of this faith practice. So she was like pretty excited about us being there. You made her a custom rosary.
Yeah.
Probably the baddest. It was a badass rosary, man. When I saw it, I wanted to keep it myself. We made her this because people would think, and you say, like, wait, this person is the venerating this death effigy. She knows the Bible back and forth, and she is very Catholic in her faith practices. Yeah, like I dare anybody to go down there and argue the Bible with her. She's Catholic. Like, she is deeply Catholic. And this is a faith practice or a folk practice that she learned from her aunt on the side. When we got there, you know, it's customary when you go somewhere like that, you come with gifts. So one of the first things we did was...
But I don't think a lot of people do.
No.
Which,
again,
which is odd to me.
I think people that have that... Again, we were a very different kind of visitor there.
Yeah.
Because it's usually people from the media who have no idea what this is about. And they ask questions like, what is this? Like, is this praying to the devil? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And for us, it was like basically a family visit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't speak any Spanish, but she didn't care.
No.
She didn't care.
No, she did say later on, she told... What is his handle? Federal.
Mercurio.
You did tell him later on in a phone call that I need to work on my Spanish and stuff like that.
Yeah, she was pretty frustrated that she couldn't shit talk you.
No, but she was cool. She, I made her a custom rosary. I used Kevlar line, a thin Kevlar line, and then mainly lava stones, and then some really cool skull beads that I've seen that haven't been used anywhere else. And then I used some of the some of our vintage pendants that I've found from just going around places, and then
the crucifix knife.
Yeah, so
which was like, I remember like she pulled that knife out. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was cool to because we went back the last day of our trip, and it was cool to see her like wearing it. And that was the one like she was wearing against her body. Like that, it wasn't out in public. Like I was like, yeah. You could tell it was like, okay, this means something.
Yeah. Yeah. So we gave her a few things. We did a pretty long interview with her, which is we're working on that now. But she's an interesting lady. If anything, independently of the faith practice, she is a guardian of, and she kind of originated. Just as a woman that connects people, like she knows everybody at every level there, from high level politicians that go and like seek her out to celebrities from across the globe, and she's connected like. Very few people, like as just purely as a social engineer, mm-hmm. She's amazing in that regard. We spent a few hours there. She didn't kind of.
Yeah, we were there for a while.
She didn't kind of want to let us go. She kept like oh,
we could have been there all day.
Yeah, just stay, like hang out. Being there and kind of
should have taken her to dinner or something.
I don't know.
Maybe next time
we'll probably like see if she's willing. It's very hard to separate her from that place, apparently.
Yeah, I don't
like on her time. She's very serious about her time when she's there. Maybe. Like she's like
she works. She's working. If she's not she's greeting people and like selling them candles and blessing, you know, people and items and stuff.
Children.
Yeah,
all the kids would run in there, and each she would like give time to each of these kids and bless all of them.
She works.
Send them off. And it's almost like an obligated stop for a lot of the people that were showing up there, and all of them were calling her madrina or mm-hmm. godmother, basically. You know, again, pretty interesting. Like that interview is going to be pretty cool.
We got to have subtitles for it too.
Yeah, we're working on that.
It's all Spanish, but it's going to be. I think both English and Spanish people will really much.
We managed to convince her to she sells statues of La Santa Muerte there that she customizes herself. She dresses them. She puts all these embellishments on them, mm-hmm. and we convinced her to sell us some of them. We bought a lot of them.
Yeah,
and. Each of them on the bottom, she put a personalized prayer to each, like blessing to mm-hmm. each one has a different one. She spent like a few hours with us there, just like doing that with us. Amazing lady. And a pretty interesting conversation. We had a few things planned that for that trip. That was one of them. Mm-hmm. That kind of like kicked off some of the other adventures we were about to have. It's always been customary with us as we've been starting our like adventure to, you know, if we see a public altar or see an altar of some sort to like Santa Muerte, we go there just for luck. And it's always kind of helped us out. And we're going to need it because we went to some spicy places after that. The pizza was pretty spicy, but then we went to other places that were pretty spicy as well. We went to a place called El Mercado Sonora. Hmm? The Sonora market, which is it's
a giant witch market.
It is everything you would imagine a witch's market would be. Mm-hmm. Like whatever, when somebody says, hey, you want to go to a witch's market, whatever you imagine, it's like 10 times better, cooler than that, I guess.
And it has no end. We maybe saw 20% of that place.
Yeah. Yeah. It every corner little shop on that market has a bucket with a bunch of rusty machetes.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Because witches and like paleros and people that work with spiritual practices use those machetes to like stab into their dead spirits that they use and they carry, and it's like a rake that you have to replenish that. So everybody there sells old rusty machetes. And I bought a rusty machete, but not for that. Yeah. It's like, I need to arm myself. So immediately, do you sell machetes here? Yeah, cool. Give me one of those. Immediately put that in my bag. Yeah. I was a Book of Eli for a while there, walking around that market. We were told to kind of be on our guard by the people that were with us there because it's spicy. You can't pull out a camera and start recording there, or a phone and start like taking pictures there. You'll get your phone broken. What?
I did, though, a couple times.
Yeah, well, both of us did. We were like, there's some cool shit we need to kind of figure out. But we were warned about doing that there, like, many times. There's people selling things of the Afro-Caribbean, Palo, Santeria.
There almost seems like more of that. Like, seems like that's the most popular thing right now.
You would think that a lot of the stuff there would be, like, Mexican folk magic related or witchcraft. Like, it's
like Afro...
It's Afro-Caribbean stuff. Like we saw many shops selling these two-headed wooden statues with like horns and these cauldrons with skulls in them and a bunch of like things that you would equate with voodoo or
I that. Feel like I saw more of that than what you would typically see for like Santa Muerte or Santeria or something like that.
It is the most popular faith practice right now in Mexico. In Mexico in general, Afro-Caribbean, Palo, Santeria, all these faith practices that come from the Caribbean, come from Africa, are what is in vogue right now in most of that. And devils. many devils with their dicks out.
There was... plethora of devil dicks.
It's like we've
been bumping into dicks everywhere.
Every time we go, when we go into some of these spots across Mexico, these occult markets. I'm a kid in my mind, and you're no fucking better than I am. But... So like, we're always like, that's an interesting statue, and we're always looking
and then trying to take a picture with it.
All of these statues, always for some person. I mean, I guess a lot of them. Can I borrow your lighter? A lot of these representations of the devil you see down there have a very exposed member on them, and it's like it's part of the way they believe that you. Basically, a lot of these people that are venerating that type of shit is they're trying to get earthly wishes and delights from it. Basically, so a lot of them are wanting, you know, coveting physical shit. So that's one of the reasons that they have these members on them. And also, I mean, a devil in a lot of sense represents the lower self. So that's why they're always hung.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the dead drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing earthenware, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
That's what I was wondering, like, if it was, they're never flaccid, they're always like, bing!
Bing, they're always right there.
And I was wondering, is the practice of venerating the devil, basically, do you think it's more a male or female thing, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter. It's like, and again, people that will want to call it Satanism, or it is, but there's something else to it. There's this weird
kind or of, maybe that they're just recognizing it.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see a lot of confusion. But I mean, they have like Baphomet effigies and statues that are not the devil. They mean something completely different. But in the culture, they don't give a shit. They just want things with horns on them. Mm-hmm. That's what they believe will give them some sort of power. The Mexican Catholic Church has done a lot to alienate many members of society in Mexico and just make some of these alternative folk practices, including this satanic, demonic, orientated faith practice, like explode in popularity. I mean, why go to a church where they're gonna, you know, they're gonna be selective about who gets allowed in and what genders you identify with, or if they're in agreement with your criminal activities or not? Why would you go that route when you can just go and venerate this other, you know, demonic entity? I guess is what they kind of like. You see a lot of that in that market.
They have everything there.
We went down to some very specific aisles. Quarters aisles
where it's like you can't
not to
you
butt.
Couldn't you could yeah not to butt and you can't walk like side to side with anybody. Like bringing as big of backpacks as we had was a problem.
Yeah.
So like if you go to this market, bring a very slim backpack and be prepared to walk sideways getting into some aisles. Like
yeah.
It's thin.
We could smell death
mm-hmm.
in that aisle. And we were like, dude, it smelled like dead dog in some parts of it. Like the rotting flesh.
Dead animals.
Dead animals.
Yeah.
We saw a whole table full of bobcat
spider
pelts,
monkeys.
Dried spider monkeys, a golden monkey of some sort, dried golden monkey, frogs. A lady out of nowhere just approached us with bottles of live tarantulas. Yeah. Like, you want one, buy one of these live tarantulas. Bats in jars, live bats inside of jars. And it's like, what do you want? Like, what specific part do you want? And people would show up and say, like, hey, I need, like witches would show up mm-hmm. there. And we were, like, standing there, like, what do you need? I need a toad, and I need a tarantula, and I need a centipede. And they would have these lists of, like, things they would
need. You'll find everything there. And if it's an animal, like, I mean, you could probably find any animal.
We kept seeing dudes walk around with goats inside of boxes or just like baby goats. And you're like, hey, what's up with all these baby goats? They're going to get sacrificed at some point today. And people would show up there to buy them there. Or people would show up with the goats there because they would do workings there, because a lot of the shops were both shops that were, they would sell weird things, and also places where they would do workings on people. Like, they were doing exorcisms in some of the shops they were going through, or limpias, they were cleaning people's energetic spirits and stuff like that. Every shop we would go to, we would get offered. So, what do you want? You want money? You want to make a deal? Like, what do you want? Me and Eddie were like, no. We want to sleep at night. I'd never been to that specific shop before myself.
Like, how could you describe it? Imagine if anybody's ever been to like a big Comic-Con, like imagine San Diego Comic-Con or even one of your big Comic-Cons, New York, or a big convention, or like the NRA convention or certain parts of SHOT Show. That's exactly how it looks. It's just like, you don't see the other end of the aisle, and you think, okay, I'm outside, I'm done. Like, you almost kind of lose track of where you are because there's so much in every direction, and you'll be like, okay, here I am buying a goat skull, but over here's a knockoff Deadpool toy at this toy vendor. Yeah, now.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
yeah. And there's and also like, oh, you want to buy a dozen rusty ass machetes?
Yeah.
Over here, there's the right bucket over there. Or do you want to buy a giant they were selling this giant Baphomet statue, yeah. This furry goat demon.
What did they want for that? Do you remember?
$2,500 basically.
Yeah.
Immediately they gave us the number in dollars. Like, how much is that? $2,500. You can take this giant devil statue if you want. And also, like, a lot of them were tribal. Like, you would see people that were into that, but you would see other people that were into more Catholic magic or Catholic practices that wouldn't touch the devil, and they would be, like, territorial about their, you know, practices. Like, we don't talk to those people over there. Or, like, yeah, we don't relate. We don't talk to them, or we don't relate to those people. So there was, like, tribalism within the same giant market.
Well, the way the market's set up, it's like they separate them. They do the same thing in Guadalajara at that market. It's like they keep the Santa Muerte people kind of over here, and then you have like the traditional only Catholic people on this side. So it's almost like because I think you told me it's a union that they are all part of, all these vendors, and they like segregate, like, you guys over here, but you know, if you're just selling this, it's like they ask them, hey, what are you selling? Okay, well, you're in this area then.
And they'll shit talk each other. Like, if you go to a place, oh, don't buy from those people. They don't fucking know what they're doing. They're just fakes. Like, we know the real shit, right? I don't know. Like, I got a few of those like weird comments. We spent some time there. We have a Curios and Botanicas spot on the Sneak Reaper Industries shop now, and As we've been traveling, we find a lot of weird shit that we're like, there's no way anybody's ever going to be able to find or buy one of these things. And every now and then, when I do an EDC put picture or stuff like that, I'll post some of these up, and the people are like, where'd you get that? And like, no place where you want to go to.
Yeah.
And we bought some cool stuff this time around.
First time I've seen stuff made out of bone.
Yeah, there was
picked up everything we could find made out of bone.
Yeah, there's a maker that basically works, I think his son works at one of the biggest butcheries down there, Arrastro, and he gets a lot of the bovine bone from his son, and that's what he carves everything out of. These Santa Muerte bone effigies he's been making for years, like some of the oldest ones, like weird rosaries, just.
That's right. We got rosaries too that have bone.
Some pretty interesting things we got for the shop. Like that's going to be a pretty interesting drop when we post those up.
We pretty much emptied out Donaketa's spot too. Like,
yeah,
we came back the last day.
She has a shop attached to that public altar, and you know,
very small shop.
But she, you know, she. If you hand her money, she's not the one to put it in her pocket. She wants you to, like, she wants to, you know, she's not looking for handouts. So like when we offered to just buy things, she was like pretty stoked about it. That's, she lives off that. So we bought her out in a lot of ways, and she was like very happy about that. She's like, when are you coming back? at some point, Doña Queta.
Also too, though, she, you were saying she does a lot of charity that you won't hear about, you know, like,
yeah,
like that person who needed a surgery you were telling me about.
Yeah, the people show up there with needs, and again, one of the reasons why I have this opinion of her, and I know she's a G because she's low key and she doesn't talk about some of these things openly, or she doesn't have an Instagram account really, or she doesn't have a YouTube channel. People will show up there praying for a miracle to this death effigy, and she will contact all of her connections and figure out how to make that miracle happen in reality. People that have medical conditions or people that have some maladies. There was a kid that had pretty aggressive cancer there that showed up and just wanted more time. That's what the kid was praying for, more time. She heard this, and she figured out how to get that kid more time. She knows people from various parts of society, and she got that kid the help he needed, and that kid's growing now. He's like, he beat it. Again, that's in my opinion. I always look at people like that, you know, that have this practice, and service is what I see in her. She's always about service, and she's pretty incredible.
The only reason we know that too is because it's not like she goes around talking about that. It's because I can't pronounce his handle.
Mercurio.
Yeah,
Mercury.
He knows her really well, and he knows like for years he's been around her and he knows exactly what she's doing. So we get that information from him. Yeah. It's not like she's like, oh, I did this and I did this. Like,
no,
this is,
she's low key. She keeps some of that shit quiet, but we hear these things. We see these things because people around her are always like, how the hell did you get this person this? Right. I think that's what people sometimes consider miraculous about that space. They just find help there and they've, you know, but you know, that, I mean, that could be the miracle of that space. There's just this lady there that has all this ability to connect the dots at a high level and get these people the help they need. We also did a side tour of the City of the Gods. We went to...
Oh, yeah, that was cool. That was like a bucket list kind of thing for me.
We went to visit the Pyramid of the Sun and the Moon. What did you think about these giant structures that we suddenly came upon?
So I've been to the pyramids in Tulum, which was great, but the issue is you couldn't get very close to them. But these, you could actually, one of them, they actually let you go halfway up.
Yeah, we climbed the Pyramid of the Moon.
Yes,
which I in the past you could climb the Pyramid of the Sun. For me it was pretty cathartic. It's like I was there exactly 10 years ago,
yeah.
before I got to climb the Pyramid of the Sun back then when you still could climb it. So I went all the way to the top and I took a picture overlooking the Pyramid of the Moon. And this time we went down and I took a picture on the Pyramid of the Moon overlooking the Pyramid of the Sun this time. Aliens? Who built these?
Well, I don't know. I mean, So you told me that it wasn't even the Aztecs that built those, because the Aztecs found them. So
yeah,
nobody really knows who put those there.
Yeah,
like built on top of it.
We don't know the name of the people that built them. When the Aztecs came through that valley, that city had already been abandoned for hundreds of years. So
who knows?
You saw this very sophisticated city. With some weird phenomenons. There's some places where you can whisper to somebody across the way.
Oh, yeah.
And you could, there's this weird echoing tube that you find in some of the spots there in this complex. And there's, I don't know, it's massive. It's a massive place. And for people that, you know, from the US that don't have something that old and that grand that they can see, it's just a weird,
or be even that close, or like in our instance actually go on, you know, halfway to the top of the Pyramid of the Moon, which was like, it's not exactly an easy thing to get up. It's a little sketch and people are like just one arming their child and they're just like holding on to the rope and going up. I'm like, dude, you better not drop that kid because he ain't gonna stop rolling.
There's like a wire thing that people,
it's like
hold
a rubber
on.
Rope that gets sweaty from everybody's hands.
But that's how beginners do it. Like I went on all fours basically. If you can climb it sideways because the stairs are so narrow, or you can go on all fours, which is, that's how I did it. I just grabbed like hand over foot,
yeah,
all the way up. It was a pretty cool experience. 10 years ago I went up there right at the end of my career, almost at the end of my career. I was a new dad trying to figure shit out and I asked for more time, and there I was with you guys 10 years later, after all the random adventures that I've been on and all the stuff that I've seen and done. And asking for more time.
Did you ask for anything this time?
More time, I think. You know, that's all we can ask for in the end. It was a pretty cool spot, pretty cool place. It's always been like this, I don't know, that place lives in my mind, you know? It's like a place where every now and then
Seem real. It's very surreal to, like, I don't know, like you. I don't even know how to describe it. It's very, because I still want to visit the pyramids in Egypt. So, but this was very much like, I don't know. It's they're massive, and it's just
aliens. Do you think aliens built them?
Probably. I don't know. Probably.
I think it's probably Mexicans.
Hella slave work, I guess. Maybe
we went to the anthropology museum as well, mm-hmm. in Mexico City, and we got to see some of the Aztec or the Mexica cultures statues and stuff they left behind, and you could see, you know, you can see the DNA of what that culture was and some of the massive megalithic stuff that they made. Because they were basically a giant snake cult. That's why there's an eagle eating a snake on the flag, because the eagle represents Spain and the snake represents the culture that was there, which were the Aztecs. I see the hand of man in all of that. I don't see any aliens in any of that. I see a very sophisticated people that some of the stuff that the older cultures were better and more sophisticated than their newer culture, which is again something you find in Egypt as well. Mm-hmm. Something about this older mother father culture, like the Olmecs or whatever you want to call them, that were just more sophisticated in the way they would build things and the technology they would have. People still can't figure out how they make these massive megalithic things that are now in that museum.
That's what I find weird, is that, like, they obviously knew some kind of construction that we haven't figured out yet. But then again, when they draw their pictures or carve their pictures, it's not very lifelike. It's almost like kind of cartoonish. But then they had these construction skills. So, like, why wouldn't they draw lifelike stuff instead of making, like, these blocky kind of cartoonish figures, but then at the same time use like this mathematical precision to build, you know, structures? That's weird to me that they would, you know,
there's
like instead of doing like a realistic artistic, you know, picture like this, they do like a cartoony, you know, kind of. That's weird to me.
The obsession, specifically the Mexica, because a lot of the stuff we were seeing there was from the Mexica culture, the last parts of it before the conquest, when the Spanish came, you would see a lot of it was very much related to, and I know there's people out there that think that the Mexica or the Aztecs were the good guys in the story, whatever story they have in their heads, you know. I always find it fascinating and also kind of like insulting that a lot of people that self-identify themselves as Mexicans will call themselves, we're Aztecs, like Aztec blood. The Aztecs were the losing side of the conquest. The Spanish did not beat the Aztec Empire. There were not a lot of Spanish conquistadors coming in to invade. The reason they won in that war is because they allied themselves with every single people that hated the Mexica. The Mexica were the villains of that story. The reason that they were defeated is because they were the villains of that region. The Spanish allied themselves with, they would go around like, hey, who do the Aztecs fear? Tlaxcaltecans, and yeah, get those guys to fight with us. So when you hear people say like, oh, I'm Aztec, or like Aztlan, speak about all these things, that's the losing side.
Like the guy in the airport.
Like the guy in the airport who was pretty proud of his Aztec heritage, which
and that's when I experienced reverse racism.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he did like what hillbillies in America would be like, hey, get out of my country if you can't speak English or something.
Yeah.
He basically was like, I hate it when people come here and they don't know Spanish, and I was just like, English.
Yeah,
I don't
like, care, bro. You Americans don't have any culture. Look at us. Look at our pyramids. He was very proud of it, and he self-identified as Aztec.
Yeah, and I told him, I was like, oh, you know, pequeño español. I was like, chupa mi verga. And he's like, oh shit, okay,
just a little bit of Spanish.
Yeah, I know a little bit.
Listo energy drink. This is not a commercial. These guys hooked us up. Legit, they hooked us up.
Like the way you're holding it, too, it looks like a commercial. Like Listo Energy,
dude.
Brought to you by the manufacturers of Listo Manufacturing.
Look, this is not a commercial. It's kind of a commercial. I'm just giving them a shout out. They hooked us up. The paleta de sandía flavor
is good.
Good.
Is it super carbonated or no?
It's fizzy.
I can't drink it. Yeah.
But it's great though. Listo energy drink, dude. Get some of this. It's great. The Paleta de Sandia one is watermelon candy with kind of spicy.
Oh, that sucks. I wish I could drink it.
Dude, it's great.
Look at
it's fucking great. So yeah, we one thing we didn't kind of mention, we went down there as well and talked to our friend Mercurio. Mercurio is active federally. That's why he can't show his face and we can't say his name. He's working against some of the newer elements of organized crime that are showing up in places like Central Mexico. The cartel situation is changing. And what used to be something that the bigger cartels would be kind of like influencing and moving around in Central Mexico is now being taken over by groups like Tren del Agua and some of these foreign criminal organizations basically coming in and going into, extortion rackets, drug sales, prostitution, and just everything related to criminality under the sun. Not only that, the federal government has realized now, and it's something that I've been screaming about for years. The federal government in Mexico has realized that a lot of the visions that they had about organized crime and cartels is they'll do raids on municipalities now. And the head of organized crime there is the head of police. And the one that's counting all the money is the mayor. And the organized crime in that region is the government. The local government is the organized crime.
Oh, do they do anything about it?
Yeah, they do these massive raids and they've arrested heads of police and stuff like that. That's some of the work he's been doing recently as well, which is like interesting.
Spicy.
Spicy. We're going to get him on the podcast pretty soon, kind of talk through some of these things. It's always, for me, it's always great getting like a on the ground type on the ground and active type of window into what's going on out there. I mean, that's why I get asked to advise on some of this stuff stateside. When we're making our way out of Mexico City, we find this reverse racist guy at the airport.
Yeah.
Mexico City's airport is a shit show of a place.
It's not my favorite airport.
It's not very organized. Gates change randomly and magically throughout.
And it's your fault for, I guess, not looking at it like, did it switch? No. Okay. Did it switch? No.
Yeah. We had our gate switched
within the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes before we
of our flight.
And we had to run, but we missed that fucking flight.
Yeah.
With how many suitcases we had? Like, we had a
four.
Lot. Four suitcases,
filled with
camera equipment, some of the stuff we bought down there, the shit show. If you miss a flight there, your suitcases get taken off the plane, and then you have to go through this weird security tunnel.
So we went through the back, like Mexican TSA, the back door
of Mexican
TSA,
and
then you get searched more.
Yeah, you get searched more to get your luggage from the airline. We basically had to sleep at the airport and fly out early or very early the next day.
Which we also had to pay for new flights. Like, it's not like how in America where they're like, oh, no worries, we'll get you on the next flight. Here's your voucher. No. It was like, oh, you missed your flight? Well, we're going to need another $1,000 from you.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that, but that was the experience.
We slept in that restaurant for a little while, and then they kicked us out of that. And then we found a concrete slab that was nice and cold and flat, and we slept on that for a little while. And then they finally, they wouldn't let us. We could check in at 3 a.m., but we couldn't. Oh, what was it? We couldn't check our bags until 5 a.m.
Yeah, so we had to wait for that, and then.
And we couldn't all just go to sleep. So, like, one person had to, like, watch the bags, and we had them tied together. And it was, we were just hobo living. It was bad. Been in the same clothes for, like, 30-something hours.
Dude, it was a nightmare. But we made it. We made it out of there alive somehow. But that wasn't the start of our bad luck. That was the start of our bad luck, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
because after that, we had a trip. Yeah.
Counter custody in Florida. Or, yeah, it was counter custody.
Which we're going to talk about in this next segment.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.